the Duncton Brighton game was it was quite interesting because Duncton were a small village and Brighton were an established club at the time. William Lillywhite wasn't allowed to play in that match. But there were a lot of bets put on that Brighton would score more runs in one innings than Duncton would score in both innings. And it did look like that was actually going to be the case.
I was reading in the book, I did see some of the book, and it was saying that betting was quite a big thing on cricket matches in those days.
Unlike today, yes, even village cricket matches, people would quote you odds and there was betting going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so they... In the second innings, Duncton came out, with nothing to lose, and they needed to score. I believe it was 30. They got to a point where they needed 37 runs to avoid defeat or to win the match. And it was James Dean and his brother Charles Dean were left with the two last batters, an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old who had probably never seen so many people around them before, and. They got to within three runs of doing that before they were both bowled out. But they were, they had done their village very proud. Mm. And then 2 weeks later, there was a return match at Sir Bing's ground in Petworth.
Yeah, Lavington.
And Duncton won by five wickets. And these guys on here, so David Dean and Charles Dean, they all played cricket. Charles Dean would move up to Northampton, and he became Northamptonshire's first professional cricketer as well.
So there was cricket in the blood then?
There was indeed.
Yeah. I mean, his nephew, James Dean Jr., played as well. He played for Sussex. He played around about a dozen matches for Sussex. Mm-hmm. He died quite young from consumption. Mm-hmm. His brother, William Dean, he was a lay clerk at Chichester Cathedral. He played for Chichester Priory Park Cricket Club as well.
Yes.
Which we found some photographs of him as well in 1863. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a lot of cricket within the Dean family. Maybe not quite as well known as the Lillywhites, but they did a lot for it in Sussex, I think.
Tell us a little bit about Roger. Tell us a little bit about James's career and what he achieved in the game. You know, did he score runs? Did he take wickets? Tell us a little bit about him.
Right, well, James Dean was really an all-rounder. He started by batting very low in the order, got some useful runs, and moved him up the order for Sussex, and he sometimes opened. But he will be remembered as a bowler, a round-arm bowler, getting plenty of wickets, often bowling unchanged with people like Wisden, with people like Lillywhite. They would bowl through the first innings and bowl through the second innings, claiming all the wickets. But his career spans 25 years for Sussex, 1837 to 1860, 61, something like that. So a very long career. But you have to remember that Sussex cricket in those days, their first-class matches would only be five or six per season. I think it's what the ECB would like to happen today. But there were only five or six matches per season, so that gave opportunities for Dean and all the other professionals to look elsewhere for employment if they weren't going back to being a ploughboy. So the MCC was a great employer of professional cricketers, and they would play matches against the counties or the clubs. And in 1846, there was a huge move in cricket because the All England 11 was first set up. The All England 11 set up by William Clark to go round the country with a troop of professional cricketers playing against 22s largely of Sheffield, of Nottingham, of Manchester, of Belfast, of Edinburgh. Tremendous travel opened up by the railways. So the All England 11 is now giving employment to professional cricketers because the counties only played such few matches. And Dean was involved with that. And that carried on for several years until there was a bit of a bust-up. And a lot of the professionals thought that William Clark, who ran the All England 11, was not being very fair with the money he was paying them, and his attitude was a bit miserly, to say the least.
Nothing changes.
No. So it was a bit like the Packer thing. So James Dean and John Wisden courageously made a breakaway group completely away from Clark, and they called it the United All England 11, doing exactly the same thing in competition, going round the whole of the British Isles, playing 22s of here and there and everywhere. So Dean and Wisden, they were chairman and secretary of that movement, still playing for Sussex when the matches came along, still based at Lord's for the MCC. So they were very, very busy people. And the United All England 11 was successful. Dean carried on playing for it. And his very last match, I think it might be the last recorded match we found anywhere, he's playing for the United over in Guernsey. So they travelled, those boys. They were aware of travelling in mid-Victorian times. So he had a very rounded life and a very long and successful career. And in the book, we've tried to put the stats in the back so you can see how many runs he got, how many wickets he took. And it really is quite an impressive haul for both Sussex, MCC, United All England 11 and the All England 11.
And when you talk about United All England and England 11, is that separate from Test matches?
It is. Test matches didn't arrive until March 1877.
Right.
So this was all before Test matches. But it's interesting to note that the first teams to go abroad, and the first English side to go abroad was it to America in 1859, was made up of All England 11 players and United All England 11 players. And it was the same when they went to Australia. So these England teams are the basis for England Test cricket as we know it today.
And actually, I was looking, this did catch my attention when I a flick through, and there's all sorts of stats, as you were saying here, Roger.
Yeah.
And one of the games, actually, I was looking for local grounds, was the Dripping Pan at Lewes.
Absolutely.
Which is the football ground now.
It's now used by Lewes Town,
right?
Yes.
Which was fascinating. So he finished his playing career, and then I was reading that he became an umpire.
Yep.
So do you want to tell us about that, Jason?
Yeah, well, there's not too much documented about his umpiring days, to be honest. There's a couple of stories about him. I mean, his cricket days came to an end. He got quite overweight, and like a lot of us, it was said that the more he tried to lose weight, the more weight he actually put on.
Okay.
And in the end, he had a special device added to the end of his walking stick, so he could pick up the cricket balls without having to bend over.
The bales.
The bales. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that sounds pretty innovative.
Yes. Yes.
And there was this particular story where he gave out. He made a poor decision and was chased back to the Oval. Was it the Oval or
Lord's, I think.
He was chased back to Lord's and he was smuggled in through a tavern window.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was just reading it. It says, on one occasion it said he gave an unpopular decision, was pursued by a crowd of angry spectators as far as Lord's itself, where he was smuggled inside through a window in the tavern in the nick of time.
Probably had a pint as well.
Yeah, but I mean, he probably umpired as many games as he played, as he seems to be umpiring. Wasn't just when he retired. He was umpiring matches during his.
Yes,
his
the professionals well. Were expected to umpire.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. And then I was reading here as well that he used to, after he gave up, he used to take part in single wicket competitions. Now I remember playing in that. Doesn't happen very often anymore, does it?
Doesn't happen very often.
I still love single wicket competitions.
Yes, but in his day, it wasn't 11 a side. It was either one, two, or three people against equivalent number on the other side.
Right.
And the famous one he played was one of the very last matches played on the old Brunswick ground just south of here. Yeah. And he took on a fairly elderly, portly chap from Alfriston. And Dean scored a very big number of runs, 73, and retired. And Pagden got 5 and 0 or something similar. But all the running around upset Pagden. He was getting on a bit. He was 18 stone. And within a few months, he passed away. And when Jemmy was asked about that match, he said, "I really regret playing in that match."
Oh,
it was what was killed poor old Pagden.
How interesting. Mm. So when this finished, we started talking about Duncton and the Cricketers Pub in Duncton. When did that happen? Was that after he finished his umpiring career?
That was around 67, 69.
So he'd finished playing by then?
It was called the Swan. It was bought by John Wisden, who then renamed it the Cricketers. And James Dean moved in, and it was in John Wisden's last will and testament, the first thing mentioned in there was the pub to go to James Dean if he outlives John Wisden, which of course he didn't, but not by many years. And James Dean would host Burton Cricket Club, and there they would have their annual meetings and what have you there. And there'd also be clay pigeon shoots organised from the Swan and the Cricketers, and James Dean was a keen shooter, as was John Wisden. And Thomas Box was also there, and he was also related to the Dean family through marriage as well, further along the tree, which is interesting. And yes, and James Dean won quite a few matches there. They usually played for £5 or a fat hog. And I've a few quotes that James Dean enjoyed eating his pork, so I imagine he took the hog as often as he could.
As for those who haven't been to Duncton, presumably the Swan, as is now the Cricketers, is on the cricket green?
No, there is no cricket green. Right, okay.
It's along the main road. Right. You can't miss it.
Yes, it's overlooked by the South Downs. It's on the A29. So if you're coming north, you descend the South Downs, you see this wonderful parish of Duncton. Jason's taken a great photograph of it, which is early in the book. Dear little village nestling away, and there is the Cricketers pub on your right-hand side. And Jemmy is buried very nearby.
Oh, yeah, I saw that picture. Yeah, that is a beautiful picture.
Great picture taken from the South Downs.
Yeah, that is a beautiful picture. And
Petworth's just a bit to the north.
Just tell us a little bit about the Cricketers and in terms of the history of this story as well.
Hmm. Well, the Swan was involved with cricket before Dean came along. It was the village pub, so it hosted Burton Park Cricket Club. It hosted Duncton when they had a cricket club. They met there. So it was quite appropriate when Jemmy took it over under his own name. It sort of intensified. Burton Park Cricket Club gave Jemmy a huge welcome when he first took the licence, and they had a sort of a congratulations evening. I think the beer went round pretty freely, and so it remained. So the pub, central to most villages, sadly they're beginning to disappear.
Yeah, yes.
But I think the Duncton one is pretty healthy, highly recommended, even by the Sussex Cricket Museum walking group.
Keith. Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. Well, Keith goes in there for a
yeah,
beer.
Yeah, he'll be in there, yes. Yeah, so, one of the lovely Sussex village pubs.
And it was the Deans carried on in there. So when James Dean passed away, the licence went over to his daughter, Anne, who married James Pescod.
Yeah.
So then they run it, and after that it went on to her son, and he run it. And
so it's a real generational. In terms of James, where would you've studied Sussex cricket for many, many years, Roger. Where would you sort of put James and his contribution to Sussex in the annals of the club?
Well, he's right up there. He's obviously not with the Ranges and the Fries or the Dexters of the modern time, but he's right up there. He's one of the real solid professionals who achieved massively. He helped develop the game. He gave cricket a good name. He gave Sussex a good name. So you'd have to sort of make him one of the sort of top professionals without being in the real upper rung with the all-time greats.
And were you aware of the story, or particularly until Jason unearthed a lot of this information?
Yes, I've been very much aware of James Dean and the Broadbridges for many, many years. It's something I've studied. But when Jason came along, it was the ideal opportunity to sort of concentrate on Dean, on his career, look at his stats, look at his background. Jason unearthed a lot of new bits of information. So it was a happy sort of partnership to
it
get
really
it all
was,
together.
Because when I met you, and then you sent me on so much more information than I didn't. That I had never seen as well. So no. and that sort of pointed me in the direction to go and find
exactly.
more about him.
Yeah, so and you did brilliantly.
It's been really good.
And at the back of the book, there are a lot of statistics.
A few.
Just give us an idea, though, of how many runs he scored and how many wickets he took, and the regularity of that as well.
Well, you'd have to look at the back of the book. But he regularly got his 5 fers or his 10 fers. Scoring was very different in those days. Scores were low. If a team got 100, they had done very well indeed. So James Dean, I don't think we found that he actually scored 100 in any form of cricket.
No, I was looking here, high scores in 1835, he met high score of 11, but yeah. In 1850 he made 65, that looked, oh no, 69 in 1847.
He did, and there's a game right at the end of his career, probably for the MCC, he got 91, didn't right. he?
99,
thank you, yes, 99. He would have been
unhappy, I imagine.
Yes, he would. So he could bat, and there's no doubt he could hold an end up, knew how to bat, but batting was a short and merry sort of employment in those days. But he was more lethal with the ball. He would regularly get good batsmen out.
Well, I'm looking here for the MCC taking 47 wickets in a season, 44 wickets in a season,
yeah.
37 wickets in a season, and for Sussex, similarly, 46 wickets in 1855. So he really was. I mean, if he was playing now, he'd probably be a T20 player, wouldn't he?
Well, not, probably not when he was getting a bit poor.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, yeah, we'll pick him anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was obviously a very good all-round man, yeah.
We started with you, Jason, so we'll finish with you. You know, you've done a lot of research, you've worked with Roger, who knows all about the history of the club. Sort of how pleased are you, what sort of gratification has it given you to find out so much about James Dean?
I have a lot of pride in having found out so much about him and doing something that I feel my grandfather would have been really pleased with. I regret not asking him about James Dean earlier, because I believe he would have probably never given me some other information, having lived with his son. And it's interesting. I've read a lot of books, I've read a lot of pages from a lot of books, and it's so interesting the traits of James Dean and how they've come down the family. There's a lot of things that are still familiar now. My grandfather looked like James Dean. His James Dean's son looked like him. There's one of our more distant relatives now, in the Deans, who still live out in Somerset, and he looks like James Dean. And there's this thing, he had a lot of nicknames, but one of them was called Joyous Jemmy, and he was a happy man. He wasn't someone who would get cross or angry. There's a really nice quote in the book from James Pycross, the cricket field, along the lines of he would never go out unhappy. He'd never go in unhappy. He was he looked as if, like every cricketer should look, like a man out on holiday, wrapped up in measureless content. And it was a delight to see such a man make a score. And I feel it makes me feel nice that there was somebody like that, and he was a good person. And I feel like I've done something not just for my grandfather, but something for James Dean, that there is now, if anyone else wants to know about James Dean, they don't have to spend 2 years finding out about it.
we answered my last question, actually. I was going to say, how long did it take you? It was 2 years worth of work?
It was approximately 2 years worth of research, when I could squeeze it in and without annoying my wife too much. But towards the last 6 months, it got a bit intense, because I kept getting more and more information, and Nicholas and Roger were going to wrap this up soon, we're going to get it done. And I'm like, I've just found out one more thing, we've got to squeeze this in somewhere. So it's been a really, really nice experience for me to do it. I've met a lot of nice people. I've been to Sussex a few times, I've been up to Lords a few times and gone through their libraries up there. So I've met Nicholas and Roger. Another chap called Andy Collier was very helpful. He provided me with this actual photo on the front.
A great photo.
Yeah.
It looks like he's going to work in the city there, actually, with his hat on and his waistcoat. And
he looks for business. And and Ruth at the Cricketers. And I've just met some really nice people, and it's been... I feel sometimes that in the last, for me, I lost quite a few people in 4 years in the family. So it's been really nice to do this, and for me to just find out about my ancestors, really, and where they all come from. And I've not finished yet. I'm gonna continue. I feel not the whole story's not quite finished with James Dean yet. So I'm gonna continue to find a few more to see what I can find.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful tribute.
It is, yeah. And Jason, before you came along, Adrian, Jason was telling us about the headstones and where they are now. Do you want to recall that story, Jason?
Oh, yes.
So there's a picture of the headstones there.
Yes.
The headstones were actually... there was a... The headstone was broken in the 80s, and I can't pronounce his name, Sir Ian...
Anstruther.
Anstruther found it and wanted to get it fixed and put back, but the parish council at the time refused to do
that. Is that in Duncton?
In Duncton.
Yep. Right.
So this old churchyard, the church was knocked down in 1879, mm-hmm. around that sort of time. So it's just a graveyard, and it's really overgrown now. It's been lost to nature. But you can still find the broad bridges and what have you. Mm. But I could never find James Dean, and I walked up and down there a dozen times to that church. And then, out of sheer luck, I was talking to somebody in another graveyard of all places, and I said, "Do you know anything about James Dean's headstone?" He goes, "I don't know about James Dean, but I think there's a couple of gravestones in the cottage next door as well." And there was. And I knocked on the door and asked the lady in there, I said, "This is a strange, strange question. I'm sorry to bother you, but have you got any wayward headstones in your house, have you, or in your garden?" She goes, "Actually, yes, I have. There's two around the side. Do you want to have a look at them?" And
Wow, how remarkable. They were James Dean's.
By that wall, yeah.
That's remarkable. Yeah. So what happened then? Have they stayed there?
They've stayed there. The graveyard is completely overgrown now. And I don't mean it needs a little mow. I mean, it is lost.
It's a jungle, yeah.
I did feel that my next quest is going to be to write to the parish council and see what can be done to clean up the graveyard. Yeah. Can we do something? Is there a reason we can't do it? Is it money? Is it health and safety? Mm-hmm. Is there anything we can do to make that clean and tidy and potentially reunite the headstones with the grave? I know where he was buried, thanks to an article that Roger found. So, and it's got a picture of Sir Ian with the broken headstone. And I can match that up to where it is in the graveyard.
Excellent.
And it would be really nice
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And actually, while we talk about the graveyard, and actually perhaps we should finish with you, Roger, because the bottom of the piece here, it says, "A victim of chronic asthma and bronchitis, Jemmy Dean was found dead in his bed on Christmas morning 1881. One of the last to see him alive the previous evening was his old friend John Wisdom." Mm-hmm. And it's very sad when somebody dies, but that's rather nice and perhaps poignant and quite fitting.
I think so. Yes, he was obviously around the fireside. Well, there are two versions, aren't there, of this story. One is that he was around the fireside with his old friends on his last day, retired to bed and died. The other one is that he'd been in bed for some time and maybe some of the family members went up to see him. But the fact that John Wisdom was there would have given him comfort, and I think was a lovely ending to this wonderful partnership between Wisdom and Dean, two lovely old Sussex cricketers.
And thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you
very much, Adrian.
Thank you.